The LG Smart TV story is the kind of thing that lands quietly and then sits with you. Researchers found that LG Smart TVs were logging audio even with the screen turned off, and actively scanning other devices connected to the local network, not just the TV's own traffic, but probing the LAN. The HN thread hit 141 comments almost immediately, and for good reason. This isn't a theoretical vulnerability. This is observed behavior.
What makes this commercially interesting and alarming is the business model logic behind it. Smart TV manufacturers have been increasingly dependent on advertising and data revenue rather than hardware margins. A TV sold at a thin margin that then provides continuous behavioral data has a very different unit economic story than a dumb display. The audio logging, if it's being used for ACR, automatic content recognition, that's already a disclosed practice in the industry, technically. But ACR is supposed to analyze what's playing on screen. Audio with the screen off is a different category entirely.
The network scanning piece is actually the part I find more technically aggressive. Logging what devices are on your local network, your phones, your laptops, your smart home hubs, gives you a household map that's genuinely valuable for identity resolution and cross-device tracking. You can build a remarkably detailed profile of a household just from knowing which device classes are present. That's not a firmware bug. That's a design decision.
From a regulatory angle, this is exactly the terrain that GDPR was designed to address, and it's been spotty in enforcement. The FTC in the US has taken action against smart TV makers before. Vizio settled for $2.2 million in 2017 over ACR practices, but that was a decade ago, and the data collection has grown significantly more sophisticated since then. The legal frameworks haven't kept pace.
The HN community's response was pragmatic in the way that community tends to be. Lots of people switching to dumb TVs paired with an Apple TV or a Raspberry Pi running Kodi, or pulling their TV's network access entirely, which is a fine individual solution. But it's worth noting that most people are not going to do that. And the population most affected by these practices is precisely the population least likely to know about them.
That asymmetry is the actual policy problem. Now, while we're talking about platform behavior and legal gray zones, the Nitter story connects here in an interesting way. Nitter and XCancel both resumed service after receiving legal advice, which strongly implies their lawyers concluded that operating these alternative frontends for X is defensible. Nitter, for those who haven't encountered it, is an open-source alternative frontend for X that strips tracking, preserves privacy, and historically allowed browsing without an account.
The platform war over scraping and alternative frontends has been running since Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter, X's aggressive rate limiting in 2023. The API pricing changes that killed most third-party clients. The cease and desist pressure on services like Nitter. What's notable about this comeback is the phrase, after legal advice. That's a signal that someone has done the analysis and concluded there's defensible ground here, whether that's fair use, the right to access publicly posted content, or some other theory.
The HN thread had 337 comments, which is enormous for a GitHub commit link. The community clearly cares, and the underlying legal question whether a platform can use terms of service to effectively privatize public speech that users voluntarily posted is one that courts haven't cleanly resolved. There's a reason this keeps coming back.
This is actually a good moment to pause on the antitrust dimension of this kind of platform behavior, because it connects to something Marcus, and I should probably explain properly for listeners who haven't followed the legal theory closely.
Right, and I'm glad you brought that up because antitrust gets thrown around a lot in these discussions. The core of antitrust law in the US traces back to the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890, and the basic intuition is simple. Monopolies are bad for markets, bad for consumers, and bad for innovation. But legally, having a monopoly isn't itself illegal. What's illegal is acquiring or maintaining a monopoly through exclusionary conduct. Behavior that harms competition in ways that go beyond just being really good at what you do.
And the key point that trips people up is market share alone. You can have 90% market share and be perfectly legal if you got there by building something genuinely better. The question courts ask is whether the dominant firm is using its position to foreclose competition in ways that harm consumers. Predatory pricing, exclusive dealing arrangements, tying products together, These are the categories that trigger scrutiny.
The analogy I find useful is a corner bakery that's so good it captures most of the neighborhood business. That's a monopoly in the colloquial sense, but it's not illegal. Now imagine that same bakery pays the landlord to refuse to rent to any competing bakeries within 3 miles. That's exclusionary conduct. When platforms use API pricing or terms of service to block alternative frontends, the question is whether that's legitimate product design or the digital equivalent of paying the landlord. Courts are still working that out.
And that's precisely the ambiguity that Nitter's lawyers are apparently navigating. Whether their resumption of service holds up legally or triggers another round of enforcement is the thread worth watching over the next few months.